Hi, it's just Gail. We did another great interview with another great author. His name is Mark Muschin. He wrote a book called The Boy with Wings, which he sent to us and let us read. It was just great. He talked about the book in the interview as well as another book that he has. He also talked about his New York Times best-selling book, which he will go into detail in the interview about. He also has created and hosts his own festival that is dedicated to the arts, reading, writing, music, and it's all combined in one festival in Tallahassee, Florida in the springtime. He'll also talk about that, as well as obviously give us a really good in-depth picture into the book, The Boy with Wings, which is what we'll be mostly discussing in this episode. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope you'll go out and get the book because it was pretty great. Can you introduce yourself to us, please?
Sure. I'm Mark Muschin.
Little Google research, but, you know, our listeners don't know.
Yeah, I'm Mark Muschin. I'm the author of the book Boy with Wings that's just out last year.
Tell me more, because you're a lawyer and you are an elected official and you have books and a festival.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be able to do a number of things. So I am the founder and the president of a festival in Florida called the Word of South Festival of Music and Literature. And we're now in our 13th year. There's really nothing like it in the country. You guys have got to come over because it's every April. And we pair authors and musicians in all these sort of weird and different ways. And the structure of the festival is there's a Friday night ticketed show. This past year it was Earth, Wind, and Fire. And then there's 50 free events through the weekend of authors and musicians. So it's all a lot of fun. And then, yeah, I'm still a lawyer and I'm a former elected official. I ran in a fit of insanity. I ran for the city committee and was elected and served 10 years. And so I'm glad I did that. And I'm glad it's over. But yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you're very accomplished.
Oh, thanks.
What kind of law did you study or practice? I guess
I do municipal bond law, which sounds like the most boring thing in the world, and it can be. But we represent cities and counties that are borrowing money, and so you know for hospitals and schools and sewer systems and stuff like that. So it's sort of this very specialized thing, and so that's I guess is one of the reasons I got into writing fiction because I needed like a creative outlet after doing bond law all day. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I tell people it was sort of an early midlife crisis, I think, because I had been a lawyer for 10 years. And I remember, you know, our clients are spread all around Florida. And so I was driving back and forth on I-75 and I-10 a lot by myself. And I remember thinking, got to be more than this. And so I decided, well, I'm going to try and do several different things besides practicing law. And so I said, well, I think I'd like to teach and I might maybe like to run for public office and maybe try and write a book. And eventually I did all of those. And I taught for a couple of years at the local community college. And that was enough to cure me of wanting to do that. And then again, in a fit of insanity, I ran for office and won. And so that, you know, I served 10 years that. And then I had just like this naive assumption I could sit down and write a book and somebody would want it. And I later heard somebody refer to that as sort of the equivalent of waking up one morning and saying, I think I'll go practice thoracic surgery today. I was very fortunate that that book was published. And then I discovered I like doing it. I never, you know, a lot of writers know at like age 13, they want to be a writer and this is what they want to do. And that wasn't really me. I wanted to be a lawyer and I am a lawyer. But I just, when I first started trying to write that book, that was a book called The Return. And the story is about a woman who claims to be Christ returned and this reporter that follows her around and tries to see, you know, is she or isn't she? And my kids were really little. And so the only time I could write was early in the morning. And I would, you know, get up and write for however long I could. And then it's just chaos the rest of the day. But I discovered I liked doing that. And it sort of worked well for me. And it kept my head in it all day. And so I'd think of stuff like, oh yeah, I need to do this, do that. And I could jot it down and then get back to it the next day. So anyway, so I just kept doing that. I do it pretty much every day. I wrote this morning, and it's just part of my life. And, it would be hard for me, I think, I know some writers I sit down for 6 hours every morning and crank it out, I can't do that. I don't think that would enjoy that. So this is just sort of the way I do it.
I like that. Yeah. And you make time for it because you care about it, but it's not this task on your plate, right? It's something that's fun.
It sort of remains fun. I mean, I look forward to it. I'm working on a novel now, and I finished the first draft of the whole thing, which is the hardest part for me. And so now I'm going back through and say, okay, well, I can, edit this, clean it up some, I can cut some stuff. Yes, I don't really need this. And so that's a lot easier for me to do.
What is this new novel? Can you tell us anything?
Well, I'm a little superstitious about talking about it because as soon as I do, people go like, well, what happened to the Revolutionary War novel? And so there's no assurance that it'll be published I have had three novels published and they're all historical to a degree. And two of the three have sort of a magical realism component. And so I have two other novels I'm working on. They're both historical. And one is just a straight historical fiction novel, and the other has a magical realism part to it. So it's sort of fun to play with both of those.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, what's your inspiration for doing historical fiction in a combination? What brings the two together for you? What makes that work for you?
Well, it takes me so long to do these books, and they become like your children, because I've spent so much time, years of my life with this that so you got to really be into it, to really enjoy the subject matter. And I enjoy just learning. The second book that I had published, and this it was called The Gendarme, and this was about the Armenian genocide. And my heritage way back, we were always told was Armenian, and I never knew much about this. And so it's through a series of circumstances, people would always ask me, if your name ends in IAN, generally that means you're of Armenian descent. It's like the IAN is son of someone. And so people would always ask me, and see my name, are you Armenian? I'm like, well, yeah, I think so. I don't know much about it. And then one night at a party, somebody asked me the same thing. I told him the same thing. And he said, oh, have you read this book, The Black Dog of Fate? I'm like, well, no, I never heard of it. So I picked it up and read it. And it's by a guy named Peter Balakian, who was, his grandparents were survivors of the Armenian genocide. And so I decided, well, I read his book. And so I'd like to learn a little bit more about this just because I don't know much about it. And so I started, doing some research. And then I said, maybe I can write a novel. And so that's what started. Seven and a half years later, it finally got published. And that's a long story in and of itself there. But I'm proud of the novel. It's been published in 10 languages. I was invited to speak in Armenia, speak in Italy. And so that was a cool thing.
Yeah.
And then Boy with Wings is, people have asked me quite a bit, well, where did you come up with this? Or Mark, you seem like such a normal guy. This is sort of dark, I'm like, well, it's not that dark, but I had, so when I was a kid, I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, where I still live part of the time. And so every year, the North Florida Fair would come to Tallahassee, and we would, that was a big deal as a kid. We'd trek down there, and there's rides and there's games and all this. And then there'd be two or three, with these kind of garishly painted, posters, sideshows, see the world's smallest horse, or see the wild man from Borneo that'll chase you around. And so I just, it was just always sort of interesting to me. And so I kind of hit on this idea of, maybe writing something that was set in a sideshow or freak show. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of or read the book Geek Love. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It's a very, very good book. And it's sort of set in this, in this sort of, milieu. So I wanted to be different from that. So it took me a while to sort of find the pacing and do it. But I just learned a lot about freak shows and sideshows. And I wanted to interview a current sideshow performer. And, a lot of the circuses and sideshows wintered in Florida. And so there's museums, there's an American Sideshow Museum down near Tampa. And near Bradenton, there were communities of freaks that they retired, and then they lived in this little town called, it was known as Gibtown, and the giant ran the diner, and the lady with the beard worked there too, and so that sort of stuff. So But I just in this day and age, you know, just exhibiting people with human oddities, you know, is sort of frowned on. And so it's hard. It was hard to find a current performer. And so and then of all things, I see that there's this sideshow coming to Tallahassee. I'm like, great. So I sign up for the VIP experience where I can meet the performers and all this. And then it cancels. And so then I see what's rescheduled. It's this other venue. So I do it again, sign up for the VIP experience and go down there. And they go, oh, you're not here for that sideshow, are you? Yeah, that canceled. And so I'm like, ah, not again. But I managed to get the contact information for the sideshow and this one guy who's sort of the lead person in it. And you can look him up, Google him. His stage name is Short E. Dangerously. And he's a half man. His body ends right at the bottom of his rib cage. And he gets around on his hands or on a skateboard. And so... So I managed to make contact with him and I asked him, said, hey, I just, by this time I'd written the book, yeah, but I said, well, hey, I'd just like to interview you about your life because I'm getting ready to do these book events about my book. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, what's your life like? You know, and he said, he agreed. And so, and he said, if you go on his website, the photo of him on the website is he has a mask on and he's breathing fire. And I said, well, you know, Shorty, we're in bookstores, no breathing fire. Here. And he said, well, would you like me to perform? Because, you know, he had traveled all over the world. He was with, you know, Ripley's Believe It or Not and stuff and all this. And he said, you know, so you have to, you know, they don't just display people. You've got to do something and perform. So he, you know, did sword swallow, breathe fire. I mean, all this stuff. So I asked him to do this, he goes, what, you know, do you want me to perform? And I said, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, well, you know, he goes, I can do, you know, push-ups. And he said, if that gets the crowd going, I can do a handstand. And he said, if I really want to blow the roof off, I can do a one-armed handstand. And I'm thinking, wow. And then he said, you know, there's that game with the cups where you put a ball in the cup and you move them around. And you have to guess which cup it's under. He says, well, I do a version of that, but I put a spike under one cup and I slam my hand down on the cups that don't have the spike. And he said, if you go on Magic Tricks Gone Wrong, Google that. This is the first thing that comes up. And so, but we did it down in Miami and my daughter moved the cups around and he did not injure himself. So, but it was really, very interesting to get to know him and just hear his story. And I asked him, you know, said, well, hey, you go into Walmart, you know, you look different from everybody else. Everybody's looking at you, you know, how do you feel about that? And he said, well, you know, he goes, sort of depends on what kind of day I'm having, you know. I said, if it's a bad day and people are like, you know, it's so good to see you. I'm like, yeah, well, why is it good to see me? I'm just, you know, I'm just here like anybody else. Then he said, sometimes it just didn't bother him. And I asked him, said, well, do you like being on stage? And he said, I love it. Said, it's the best part of my life. So it was interesting just to, you know, have to written about, you know, a story that was set in, you know, sideshow, freak show, just sort of the dynamics there that you know, to hear him sort of, you know, say that's sort of the way it is. And he paid me this great compliment. If you write historical fiction, you know, I care a lot about whether the history is right, you know, because I don't want somebody to just pick up this and go, well, any idiot knows that's not right. So he said, you know, he asked me, said, well, where did you get your, you know, where'd you do your sideshow research? Because he said, you nailed this, what it's like. And I said, well, you know, I, you know, there's documentaries, I've read these books, or there's movies that are sort of, have, you know, set in this era. There's a movie with Bradley Cooper, a remake that came out a few years ago called Nightmare Alley. And that's sort of this, you know, this type of, you know, sideshow. That was sort of what I was trying to capture. And I said, you know, I read this book by this guy. It was the memoir of a guy named Ward Hall. It's like Ward Hall, king of the sideshow. And Shorty says, I knew it. He says, I was Ward Hall's show for 2 years. And so I said, well, you know, that's, you know, it's just sort of nice to hear, you know, that, you know, hear that you got it right. That regard. So anyway, I that was the longest possible answer to your question, but okay. That's
that's okay.
No, we love it. So how did you land on wings for Johnny as opposed to horns or any kind of other, you know, oddity, if you will, that he may have had?
Well, so there's kind of the book touches on several things. You know, race is a part of it. Religion is a part of it. And then on really on what it means to be different. But I wanted to, on the religion side of things, you know, I wanted it to be, you know, Johnny is, you know, he's got these things, you know, that nobody else has. And so the natural thought is, was he like, is this otherworldly? Is he, you know, a human? I mean, what is this exactly? And so there's sort of a connotation, you know, from the Bible and everything else. Is he an angel? You know, what is an angel exactly? And so that was sort of fed into the whole thinking about it. I mean, the other part in terms of, you know, being different. So people have asked me, they said, well, Mark, you know, let me get this straight. So here you are, a white man, born in this country and this time to parents who loved you and paid you for your education. What do you know about being different? And I, you know, it's a fair question. And so I said, well, I've tried to touch the point that I think everybody knows at some level of being on the outside looking in. And for me, it was probably middle school. I had no older brothers and sisters. My mom bought my clothes. You know, I was a nerd. And I can remember being sort of ridiculed and ostracized and that just that feeling of that. So anyway, so that was sort of, you know, that's where the wings came about and sort of the whole, you know, being different part came about.
Is that where the timing comes in that you're doing this in Jim Crow, Florida?
And that sort of hits on the racial part of the book, too, because, you know, I mean, this was segregation at its, you know, at its finest there. I mean, and so without giving away too much of the story, you know, Johnny, the boy with wings, he's born in North Florida. He has these weird things on his back. The book starts with, you know, his mother. There's been, you know, it's a very, you know, rural place, you know, that there's been some other children that have died. People have heard about his deformity and there's sort of this thing, well, he's caused this, you know, they're going to burn him out or something. And so the book starts with his mother, you know, faking his death so that they can sort of escape and get out of there. And he ends up by a series of circumstances in this turpentine camp. It's still in North Florida. That's almost completely African-American workers. And so I wanted to sort of, you know, and they accept him to some degree. And so again, in terms of being different, you know, I mean, this is several levels of being different. And then when it gets to the freak show, I mean, I thought it was interesting in this time period. I mean, and this was part of the research. I mean, blacks weren't even allowed to go to these shows, all of them, you know, that they didn't want them there. Or eventually things got so bad. Well, if they got money, yeah, we'll take them, you know. And so there was that. There's conflict. So anyway, that was sort of part of the whole. And I wanted it to be, this is sort of a, this particular sideshow is sort of a down at the heels, you know, sideshow. That this goes way into the rural areas of the country that have never seen anything like this ever. And so that was all sort of intentional as well.
Okay. I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed the theme of the fact that it's like Johnny's a white boy, right? And everyone looks at him. He's a white boy with wings. Right. But then he's also like totally accepting of, you know, the segregation, not accepting of the segregation, accepting of black people, accepting. He's right. Like, what's wrong with them? Why can't they come to the show? Why are you frowning upon me for talking to them?
Yeah. That was sort of my, you know, it was by design in writing the book. I mean, there are also other little things that, you know, so, and this, you know, Shorty had sort of validated this a little bit too. So on the show, there's different, you know, there's sort of, you know, performers, and then there's the human oddities, the true freaks. And this show had both. And so some, you know, the guy who's the fire breather, he's out there 10 times a day doing this, you know, the freak comes out and just, you know, exposes himself once or twice and money flows in. And so there's this, you know, sort of jealousy almost. And in the book, you know, Johnny develops a little love interest who is just a normal person. And she kind of wishes she was a freak because she's not, you know, she's just common, you know, and he's very special. So that was a sort of little bit of sort of turning it, you know, inside out.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely interesting to look at it from her point of view, where mm-hmm. she was normal.
Yeah, right. I also love the way that you wrote it, that like it was, you know, I don't know, what is it, like third person? It was third person, right? Half the book, and then the other half was from a different person's perspective. And we never really quite had what was going on inside of Johnny's head. And yeah, I really liked that.
That was all by design, too. And I had people tell me, oh, you can't do that. That's a mistake. And so I had tried it several different ways. So just to, you know, amplify what the way she described it. So all of Johnny's chapters in the book are written from a third person point of view, and all the others are first person from various people that interacted with them. And I tried it different ways. I said, all right, well, let me try everything third person or everything first person or flip-flop it, and he would be first person and they would be third person. But it worked best. I went back to the way I'd originally done it, which is the way that you described, because again, if Johnny's a little bit of a religious figure, your angel. I mean, if you're a believer, there's always a little distance in between you and God, or you and Jesus, or you and Muhammad, or whatever it is. And so I wanted you to sort of learn about Johnny from the way other people reacted to him, and they reacted differently. And some of them, want to project themselves onto Johnny. And so anyway, I think it worked. I hoped it did. But that was I went back and forth on that a lot.
No, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a really interesting way to write it, because it's also, yeah, you're getting other people's opinions of him. You're getting other people's outsiders' perspectives of him. And in some moments, it's like, gosh, this kid is such a jackass. Why is he being a jerk right now? Right. And then in other moments, it's like, oh my gosh, this poor guy, like, you feel for him. Obviously, he's our protagonist throughout the whole book. So no, I really liked it. It was very well written. Very interesting.
Yeah. And getting everybody else's backstories too, built on those characters within the freak show, what Robert had been through and what Sheila had been through. And I thought that was really interesting too. It added a whole nother layer to it. So
yeah. Thanks. Well, yeah, people have asked me, and it's a hard question to answer. So what's your favorite character in the book? I'm like, well, I'm not sure I have a favorite character. I mean, there's some that I thought were unique, and that's a lot of, the what I try and do. I mean, you don't want stock characters with, anybody knows that. And so the character of Tiny Tot, so the dwarf woman who runs the freak show, I thought was interesting, because here's somebody that it had to, she looks different from the minute you meet her. She's a woman in the 1930s, people are going to try and take advantage, look down at her, whatever. And she has to be super tough to make this work. And she does. And so that was, I thought an interesting character. And then I have a soft spot for the bad guy, the murderer, the one-armed guy. And I just, I tried to give him some backstory so you would understand a little bit about, well, how did this guy get to be this way? And what is his life like? How does he live? And that sort of thing. So anyway, that was, again, I don't know that I have absolute favorites among the, but that, I wanted to give a range of, sort of different people that were reacting to Johnny.
It was really well written. And to be honest, when we first got it, I was like, this is going to be so sad. Like, I don't know if I want to read this. And then I read the first chapter and I'm like, oh my God, this is so sad. And Daphne read the first chapter and she's like, this is so sad. And I was like, I'm on chapter 7. It gets worse. And then where it starts getting better, it's happier. Also very sad, but I don't know. I liked the whole picture of it, all of the different dynamics of it, the different characters, the phases of life. Like, I thought it was really, really, really a page turner. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. I don't get to read a ton, and I was up reading until like 11:30 at night and stuff.
So, oh, cool.
Yeah. Not that want to be, I just don't have time to be. So
tell me about it. The minute my head gets horizontal, no matter almost any book, I'm falling asleep. So I got to, sit up, be upright, reading. I was going to mention something about that. I know. So the best books to me, and I don't know about you guys, but what I try and do, and I enjoy these type of books in particular, that first, I want to entertain you. I mean, I want it to be a page turner. You want to keep reading, but also that it works on another level. It makes you think a little bit. I mean, what is an angel here? I mean, how would you know if one walked in the door? Are they going to have wings? Are you going to immediately be able to tell? Oh yeah, this is an angel. And so things like that, what does it mean to be different? You can pick some current day things where people are ostracized and treated horribly, because they're different. And so those were things that I wanted to, sort of a dual purpose and trying to have things going in the book.
Yeah, there were a lot of heartbreaking elements on very different levels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought it was really good, but I was also, I got depressed. Parts. I was like, oh, this is awful. And I was telling my husband about it, and he's like, oh, that sounds terrible. I'm like, it's written well, and it's
It's a great book.
The characters are developing well. I said, it's just really sad, you know, but also not.
But it places you in that time frame and that mindset. And it's weird to think about because, I mean, it's something I've never thought about, except for when I was watching American Horror Story, the Freak Show season, which I mean, you probably watched that as well.
Yes, exactly. Well, I was going to say, so if you want dark, you know, so the Gendarme, my second book this year about the Armenian genocide. So the actual genocide, which the main reaction I got to that book was people would say, we had no idea this ever happened. And so, I mean, what actually happened in the beginning of World War One, the Armenians were this Christian community that was within Turkey and the Ottoman Empire. And the Turks ended up being on the side of the Germans in World War One, and the Russians, you know, who were Christian, were on the side of the English and the U.S. And so there was this paranoia in Turkey. Oh, these people, they're colluding with our enemies, you know. And so they killed most of the Armenian men and made the women and children march out of the country through the desert. And so that's, you know, so many people died along the way. It was horrible. And so that was, you know, I mean, I read all these, you know, people, survivor stories, and, you know, even oral histories of people that made it through that. It was really, really difficult research. And so when I wrote the book, I mean, it is what it is. And the way that book is set up, so the main character is a gendarme, which is a policeman. And he was one of the people that were escorting these caravans out of the country. And he sort of falls in love with one of the girls who's being escorted, the Armenian girls that's being escorted out. And so that's the historical part. And the present day part, he ends up being wounded in the war and has a head injury and has lost a lot of his memory and immigrates to the U.S. And then late in life, he's having these, you know, seizures, and he's suddenly remembering all this stuff. And so that's sort of the way that works. I tried in that book in particular to put as much humor in it as I could, because the other, it was so dark on some of this other stuff. And so, I think it worked okay. And for the humor part. So he ends up living in southern Georgia, which is very near where I live. And believe me, I know these folks. And so there are a lot of them are my relatives. So I mind my whole, you know, crazy things my relatives are doing to put in for the humor parts of that book. And hopefully, they're not big readers. Hopefully they never read it or recognize themselves.
Well, I think you have to do that, right? You have to interject, because obviously our podcast is depressing and sad, but we have put a lot of dark humor into it, because we just have to. And so, you know, saying your book is sad and it's based on history, but also not on real people, I don't know why that seemed so much more sad to me then. And I think too, you know, like Daphne and I always talk about when we're doing our research, sometimes it's really terrible and really sad. And so when you're done with it, you just block it out. Like you just forget about it. So, right. Well, or you do five ghost stories to break it up a little bit.
I do cases that give me amnesia.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, there's this thing, and I, as an American, I've, you know, fall into this. Americans love happy endings, you know, and much, much more than other people around the globe. And so, and I like happy endings, but if it's too happy, if it's wrapped up too perfect bow, it's sort of a Hallmark movie type thing that I don't get much out of. And so I don't, you know, I mean, my wife is we read a lot. My wife's a big reader too. And we sort of have the same feeling on this. If it's too perfect, you know, that sort of leaves you wanting something. But she's like, if it's too depressing, I'm not reading it. So there's a happy medium there somewhere.
Well, and for sure in The Boy with Wings, there was a very happy medium, because like I said, it was very sad, but also the people were making the best of their situations when they could, and they were enjoying their lives when they could and while they could. But all these outlying circumstances that would just kind of come and knock the stool right out from under their feet again. So
yeah, that's life to a large degree for people. So you know, I always try and be, I want to be realistic at a certain level. I mean, obviously Boy with Wings, I mean, the boy has wings, you know, so a little bit past, you know, strictly real there, but real life. I mean, a turpentine camp, you know, was not a, you know, that was a rough life. I mean, it's basically half step from slavery. And so that is what it was. The Freak Shows, the interesting thing about that book of the guy that Ward Hall, the king of the sideshow guy, was just how hard it is to make those shows work. You know, I mean, they got to take everything out, put it up, Hope it doesn't rain, because if it rains, washes everything out, they lose money immediately. Put it all back in, go to the next stop, do it all over again. Deal with performers quitting or somebody getting sick or whatever. And so it's just, it's really, that's a hard, hard life. So hey, I wanted to be realistic about, sort of depicting that the way it really was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a good job.
Yeah, you did a great job at it. I think.
Well, thank you.
I was just going to say that I think, that way of life was so hard, and it's really interesting to read about it. And I think you really touch on historical fiction granted, I didn't live it, so I don't know. I wasn't there, but I think you touched on it very well.
So I'm trying to learn about it and be real about it. But I think one thing is we take a lot for granted this day and age, there's a grocery store down the street. I can get food whenever I need it, And so that, wasn't always that way, even for people in my family, 800 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that, that's sort of it's interesting. You don't stop. I think that's another thing as Americans, we don't stop to think about this a lot. I mean, if you've traveled much around the world, there's, a lot of places are living on $2 a day, so it's, we've got it pretty good in a lot of respects here.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the gum camp, they were kind of in the in-between, or would you call it turpentine camp?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they were, obviously probably they had been born into slavery, or their ancestors had been born into slavery. And then they're like in this indentured servant space.
Well, exactly. Where it's hard to get out of. So, and that was the way those, I did. I mean, there were a number of those camps near where I grew up. I can remember, seeing the turpentine, these little, tin pans on trees with the notches cut in them where they're, they're getting the turpentine. And so, but they, it was a, they had to, buy their food from the company store. You're paid in the script. You can only use it at the company store. You sort of never get out of indebtedness to the company. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a hard life.
But they've made the best of it.
Well, exactly. And we're
as they could.
To a large degree.
Exactly.
Yeah, they absolutely did. So you said, okay, I've seen the signs about in like Sarasota and Bradenton. So there's still communities of freak shows happening there, or are they just posted signs?
No,
I never did research.
Yeah, it was sort of retirees there. And a lot of, the heydays of the circuses, which is also sort of why I set this where I did. So, the heydays of the traveling circus was sort of right after the turn of the century. So the early 1900s, because, Coney Island and all that was, early part of the century, the Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey. I mean, that was all, they were doing the circus train stuff. That was that time period. And so these freak shows were sort of then too. And then things started to, movies were getting to be a bigger deal. Things, there were still circuses, but not to the extent that there were back then. And so that was, and so when those people retired, they moved to Florida, like a lot of people do. But then they're starting to die off. And so the Gibb Town is nowhere near, I think, even what it was 10 or 15 years ago in terms of people that are, they were in the sideshow type people that are still living there.
Yeah. I was just wondering, because I'd seen the signs, but I never, I never did any deep digging into it.
Yeah, I mean, the Sideshow Museum is pretty interesting, really. I mean, it's just, they have tons of, because I went and took pictures of it, because I remembered these signs, and it was exactly the way I remembered it for the most part. I mean, they're a certain color, and they're done a certain way, and so I took photos of that, because it's interesting on this book, this particular publisher, they're very big on the covers. And so they, and most people don't know, usually the author gets to pick neither the title nor the cover. And so, but these guys, they asked me a ton of detailed questions about, tell us how you envision the cover, give us examples of covers you like, give us photos of what you're talking about, what you're trying to do. And then they prepared mock-ups of four different covers and asked me to rank them, which I did. And then they took the top two and did a poll on the internet as to what people like the best of those. And so the one that's the final cover was the one that won the poll. They said they don't always do that, but it's sort of an indication to them as sort of, and they had told me, yeah, we think this one will get the most votes, and it did. So I was very pleased with the cover. I thought she did a super nice job on that. On the gendarme, so I had no say in that at all on the cover. The title was my title. But so that in that story, the girl who's on the march, who the guy falls in love with, has mismatched eyes. One is blue and one is green. And so the way they they did the cover is it's a wraparound cover. And on the front, it's one side of her face with the blue eye. And on the back, it's the green eye on the other side of her face. So it's really cool. And so that was, I couldn't have asked for more than that. And my first book, The Return, it wasn't my title and wasn't the cover I wanted. I had a friend that I was a painter, and she had offered to paint, had read the manuscript, offered to paint something for, it was a cup that could be used for a cover, which I liked. And so I sent it to the publisher and said, hey, can we use this? They go, yeah, I think we can. Then backtrack. Well, we might can use it on the back, and then backtrack. Well, so it ended up in this little thing on the inside cover. But that was, you know, it was their call on that.
Well, I guess that's big business, right?
Well, exactly. It is a business. And you tend to forget that. I mean, they're people, you know, they're people are here to make money, you know, and the publishing business and the agents and all that. And so sometimes as a writer, you're like, why aren't you doing this? This is good, you know? And there's like, well, I can't sell it. I can't make money.
Right. Yeah. I guess it's a part I've never thought about.
Yeah.
That people
that you decide
get to have that authority over your book.
Yeah. That other people decide whether or not somebody else is going to like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And I don't know if you have anything else that you wanted to add. We didn't want to take too much of your time.
Thanks for having me. I'll put in another pitch for the festival, because it's every April we do this. And so the next one, next year in 27, it'll be April 9th through 11th. So come to Tallahassee and check it out. I think you'd really like it.
Yeah. I did have a question for you. Has anyone given you any fanfic art about like pictures of Johnny that they've drawn up, or anyone else?
Let me think here. I've gotten, people have sent me pictures of wings and stuff. So it's interesting that I had never noticed this before, but now I see almost, you know, it seemed like everywhere I go, there's places where, you know, wings have been painted and you can go stand in front of it and get your photo taken. So I was at a bookstore, you know, about my book, and here, look at this, I can get my photo taken with wings here, you know? And so that was all pretty cool. But people have, you know, I get, it's interesting getting feedback from readers about the book, and some is good, some is bad. You know, I don't tend to read the reviews a ton, like on Goodreads and stuff, because, you know, I mean, people, books are subjective. You know, what I like, you might not like, and vice versa. So I respect that. I just hope, you know, and people that it's really connected with, I'm really grateful.
Oh, and I feel like people are more willing to go on and complain than they are to build
up. Generally, yes.
Yeah. I'm generally a DNF, and I finished this one, so.
Well, thank you.
I just have a hard time connecting with books, I guess. I guess I just have so much, you know, happening everyday life that it's like, when I get any free time, it's not necessarily reading that I want to do. Oh, no, I'll be picking up more of your books.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I need to read that. Yeah, I need to read them. Too. Although I might have to take a break because that was kind of depressing. And I next right. episode of the podcast is going to be depressing. So,
well, when I did a Google of your name, I did see that your other book has an Audible, and I do appreciate that, so I can listen to it while I'm sleeping and stuff. Sometimes that makes book consumption a little easier.
I know, we're trying to get one done for this book too. So there may be one of those coming in the next before the end of the year. So that'll be great. I listen to a lot of books on tape, actually, and some, you know, it's interesting how, I mean, the people that read these, some of them are incredibly talented, and so my experience is it can either really make a book, I mean, really improve the book, really, you know, and some go the other way. I listened to one, it was like, oh my goodness, and then I saw where the author was like disavowing, please do not listen to the audio of my book. Wow. Hope that never happens.
I see that all the time. I was on Book Talk for a long time, just, you know, TikTok's book algorithm, and people were like ranking books, and it's like audiobook 10 out of 10, actual book don't even bother, or you know, the other way around.
Well, and I'm with you, I listen to like probably 2 books a week on average, because I can just listen and do other stuff. You were wrapping it up talking about the festival in April.
So you know, come check it out. It's April 9th to 11th, Tallahassee, Florida, Word of South. I think it's like nothing else. I think people really enjoy it.
Is it at the campus?
No, it's at a downtown park. And so there's 8 different stages. Some are under tents, some are inside in a hotel that's adjacent to the park. And so it's a great setup. It's a good mix of music, good mix of authors, different genres, different types of music. I think it's a pretty special thing.
All right. Well, if we can make it, we'll let you know.
Come on down.
Thank you very much for
talking to us. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. And for exposing us to that book, because it was great.
Well, yeah. Thanks for reading. And thanks for having me on the show.
Like I said, I DNF all the time and I loved it. So I felt very proud of myself. And I was like, oh, I actually just kept going and kept going and kept going because I really liked it.
Yeah. And it definitely wouldn't be something on my radar to read. So I was glad the opportunity was presented to us because, yeah, it was great. And it was also good for me to read a book instead of just listen to a book. I was like, this is good for my brain.
Cool. So, all right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.